The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the show Your Money with David Hayes on this snowy Thursday in February. I was actually in Scottsdale, Arizona last week and didn't have to put up with any of this, so I wish this would have came last week and not this week, so I'm certainly questioning my intelligence by being here in the south central part of Indiana. But now I'm glad I'm here. It's going to be a fun show. Thankfully, Rob showed up today, and we could knock this thing out for everyone. If you're listening on Saturday morning, I think it will be sunny and a little bit warmer as the Hoosiers host the Illini at noon on Saturday at Assembly Hall. Let's do a little news of the week brought to you by my good friend Dirk Bland and Nikki over at Kenny Bland Auctions. They are your full-service auction service. Visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. And Unrivaled Electric, they want to be your full-service electrical contractor. They specialize in generators. I didn't have to use mine yet, although I did talk to some people this morning who had electricity out not far from me, and also solar arrays. Not a good day for that. Maybe you need to do a belt and suspenders. Get a generator and get solar, but call Unrivaled Electric for all of that at 812-361-3604 or find them on Facebook. And last but not least, Attorney Lance Like at the Like Law Group is encouraging you all to get your estate in order here in 2022. To give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning, call my friend Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. All right, the S&P was down in January. It was actually, with one day left, it was almost 7% down. We're going to get into that in the second segment as well. The worst January performance since we lost 8.5% back in January of 2009. That tumble in 2009, of course, continued through March 9th of 2009, when the S&P reached a 24.6% year-to-date loss. And then we began an 11-year bull run that ended February 19th of 2020, of course, when we had the massive self-imposed economic shutdown. Declines do happen, and I will get into more of this in just a bit. When the S&P closed at 43.27 on Thursday of the 27th of January, my mother's birthday, the stock index was down 9.7% from its all-time high of 47.93 set just a month before. A decline of 10% would be the index's 21st tumble of at least 10%, but less than 20% in the last 50 years. But it would be the sixth since 2015. Declines of at least 10% are called, of course, corrections. Now, here's what I wanted to share with you about this. This kind of stuff's normal. Don't get all out of shape about it. Here's the problem. In the last 10 years, we have only had two back-to-back quarters that have been negative. Only two. So that's of the last 40 quarters, we've had two back-to-back losing quarters. What year was that? 2015. So we have not experienced much at all as far as declines and crazy volatility. But folks, this is normal. And we're going to talk again more about that in a bit. Talking about net worth in America, this is kind of interesting. After peaking at $58.6 trillion back in 2007, household net worth fell during the mortgage crisis by 14% down to $50 trillion. It took another 3 years before it got back to that peak of 58.6. But after peaking at $118 trillion in March of 2020, That's more than double, almost. It's about double the net worth that we had in the United States in 2007. But anyway, March 31st of 2020, the net worth was $118 trillion. It fell to $110 trillion during the global pandemic. It took just 3 months before the household net worth exceeded the previous peak, so it didn't take long to bounce back. You know, a lot of people have debt, but a lot of people don't. As of September 30th of 2021, 26% of all households or are homeowners who have no mortgage debt on their primary residence. 33.3 million debt-free households out of 126 million households nationwide. I know we all thrive. A lot of that's demographics. You know, as you get older and we have this big baby boom generation, what are they doing? They're saving. They're paying down their debt. So it's not uncommon for actually most of my clients as they head into retirement. That's our number one thing. Let's figure out a way to get this house paid off. And we do it. So most of my folks in retirement do not have debt on their homes by their own doing or by my encouragement, one or the other. But it is a nice feeling when you can walk in that door and know you actually own it. Unlike your IRAs and 401ks that you don't own completely, because every time you open that door and pull a little money out, guess what? Your partner gets a share of that. That's more for the podcast this week. Listen to it on Monday. It'll be out, assuming this weather doesn't mess up the editing process, but it should be out Monday. If not, it may be delayed till Tuesday. But nonetheless, we'll continue to beat on that topic and convince people to go from tax forever to tax-free forever and how to do that. Compensation in the U.S. was up 4% in 2021. That's the highest advance in 20 years. We gave 6% raises at our office. People are like, man, what a generous raise. I'm like, hey, things cost more, dude. I mean, look at gas, look at everything. It's all up. And we appreciate the people that we have and certainly want them to feel appreciated as well. Let's look at this. National debt, the U.S. national debt reached $20 trillion in 2017, and now we are knocking on the door of $30 trillion just 4.5 years later. Wow. And if you go back and look at the cost of borrowing in 2017, it wasn't much different than it is today. Not a lot different, a little bit different. But I go back, 10 years and say, okay, we were $15 trillion in debt 10 years ago, and the 10-year Treasury was around 3, and now we are $30 trillion, and the 10-year is now 1.7. But it was around 1.5, so we were able to borrow twice the amount of money for the same borrowing cost, technically speaking. Finally, retirement time, right? We had a lot of that lately. Tom or Aaron? Tom Brady, of course, announced his retirement this week from the Buccaneers, formerly with the Patriots. But this is interesting because Aaron Rodgers as well has been around a long time. The NFL Conference Championship football games were played last weekend. Chiefs, Bengals, Rams, 49ers. That breaks a streak of 11 consecutive years that Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers have not played. I mean, they've played in the last 11 years. Those guys have been in those games. That's crazy. So when do you know when to retire? We did a show on that right between Christmas and New Year's with my father, Jerry, we had a great show. It was so much fun. If you didn't get a chance to listen to it, listen to it. But it was about when do you know when you're ready to retire? Well, we went through all of this stuff with my dad, and finally at the end, the answer was, you'll just know. You'll just know when it's time. Well, Tom just knew it was time, because not long ago he was saying no, he was going to continue to play, but he just said the time was now. And that reminds me of our good friend Chuck Crabb, who announced his abrupt retirement this past week. And I have not spoke to Chuck, but I plan to. I was going to let the flurry of text messages and phone calls, slow down a little bit before I reach out to him. But he said it in the article, the interviews. It was just time. It was just time. So I had expected Chuck to continue to announce for the foreseeable future. No indication from him to me that he had planned to retire. But, life happens. Things happen. So the best to Chuck, my good friend, and hopefully I'll see him soon. And we'll get to the bottom of this and make this an absolutely wonderful, fantastic, fulfilling retirement that he so deserves with his wonderful wife, Madeline. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get on this topic of markets and the volatility. And we also have other things about stock buybacks and splits and all that kind of stuff. So we'll have a fun section to talk about next. This is Your Money with David Hayes. So what did I tell you? Only two consecutive negative quarters in a row in the last 40 quarters. That's 10 years. Wow. And we've had a lot of ups since the mortgage crisis back in 2007, 8, and 9. And here we sit today with a little correction on our hands. But, you know, we ended the week up this week as we reached into the first week of February. But we've commented on air that corrections happen, and a widespread sell-off of 10% or greater is certainly possible at any time. And now that it's been fully realized, as of January 24th, the S&P reached an intraday decline of more than 12%, the Dow down 10%, and the NASDAQ and Russell were down 18% and 21% from their previous highs. So that's it. The market history and human nature warranted a high likelihood of a double-digit sell-off in stocks. The S&P had increased more than 120% between March 23rd of 2020 and 2022. This comes from Transamerica. In case those numbers are wrong, they're not mine, they're theirs. Over that, because it seems incredible, right, that it would have more than doubled. But I guess it has if you really think about it. But yeah, because we're talking about the March 23rd, so we're at the very, very bottom of the pandemic. Over the past 70 years, there's only been four times in which the S&P had more than doubled without a 10% decline along the way. So this sell-off should not be very surprising at all. We've also had a host of negative catalysts in the recent declines that created further additional downside pressure to equities. Of course, inflation's been the biggie. Inflation's been up and it's running hot, and I think we're going to continue to see it run hot into 2022, and then we'll see what the Fed does, and that's the next biggie. The Fed policy seemed to be kind of rambunctious last week, to say the least, where Fed Chairman Powell came out and said, hey, we may not just raise rates four times in 2022. We might do a half-point increase at our first meeting in March. So that made the thing go a little bit nutso. And then, you know, then some more calming words came out. Economic growth, we don't know what that's going to be for 2022, because as interest rates go up, that typically starts to tamper the company's ability to do things that would cause stock prices to go up, which would cause you know, people to feel good and to spend money, and that's what really drives everything. We have earnings season now, been pretty good, but if you hit your expected earnings or exceed them slightly, then you're in the pasture just fine. But man, if you miss, they just absolutely clobber you. We saw that with a couple big tech names this past week. And of course, we have the geopolitical risk, which I told Glass yesterday on Wednesday that, you know, yeah, there's some concerns there about rising prices in some areas that that could be affected with the Russian-Ukrainian standoff, but we didn't see that as a big issue when it came to our markets. So sell-offs of the current magnitude certainly can feel painful at times, but certainly is needed and is a healthy market, and that's what we really need. Now, let's look at a couple of other things here that I wrote down. Low rates. Let's talk about lower interest rates. So why would Apple, who has more cash than God, ever go borrow money, right? And of course, this is not a recommendation to buy or sell any securities, for informational purposes only. Thank you very much. Compliance. Here we go. So they borrow because it's cheap. It was cheaper for them to borrow money to pay a dividend than it was to repatriate money from overseas and pay taxes. So that was one reason. The other is, what else could they do with their excess cash flow if they borrowed cheaply? Is they invest back into their businesses, right, and grow. And that's those high growth companies. Well, if interest rates go up, that's less ability for those companies who don't have earnings or good earnings to be able to do that. So that would hurt their stock prices. That's what we saw last week a lot. And then finally is stock buybacks. A lot of these big companies that are big tech companies, especially with great cash flow, great balance sheets, they've been buying back stock. Well, when you buy stock off the market, that's less shares available, then that brings your price up. So much of what you've seen in appreciation in the last couple of years has been stock buybacks. They've been buying it off the market, sticking it back in the treasury. And then later, if they need to raise capital, guess what? They'll do the reverse. But what happens when they do that? When they stop doing it, it means that won't be a catalyst for growth of that company. And then eventually, if they start releasing more shares, then that's dilutive and that would decrease your share. So we keep a very close eye on what's happening in that arena. And then finally, stock splits. That was under big news this week and under the microscope, because why is Google announcing a 20-for-1 stock split? Well, Google trades for what, $1 million a share? No, it's not that much, but it's 3,000 or something, crazy number. So they're announcing a stock split to get it down to a price that could attract retail investors, institutional investors, mutual funds, hedge funds, insurance companies, whatever. They don't care what the share price is. I mean, look at Berkshire. They've been running on that path for years. So they don't care. They have plenty of money to buy it at whatever share price it is. But individuals don't. Now, I know some platforms allow you to buy fractional shares and things like that, but that's their motive. So we've seen this in the past where folks are like, wow, it's cheaper. No, it's not cheaper. You still have the exact same money. Instead of one stock, you now have 20 stocks. So if I have $100,000 in a stock and it was worth, I'm sorry, I have one stock worth $100,000 and they do a 20-for-1 stock split, now I just have 20 stocks, but it's still worth $100,000. So that's the way that stuff works. It doesn't really increase, but it does increase volume sometimes, which then could push up the prices. But fundamentally, nothing has changed. In fact, it's more expensive for a company to have more shares out on the market. They are charged by the exchanges based on a lot of factors, but one would be the number of outstanding shares. So that's kind of an interesting little tidbit on the markets, on interest rates, and on stock splits. And I did that all without the help of Hot Rod, because he had a snow day today. Although I know he's working, because I've talked to him several times via text and emails. But I thought, I won't bother him today. I'll do the heavy lifting all by myself. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, AT&T to slash its dividend in half. What's happening to the once thought of orphans and widows pension fund? We'll be back. We'll talk about that and more. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone, on this snowy Thursday in February. I was in Scottsdale last week. I have a couple things to talk about as it relates to my trip in the upcoming segment on Social Security, a little lesson on Social Security and delay benefits and seeing things actually happen in action, which is pretty cool, as I visited with a client while I was out in Scottsdale. All right, so AT&T to slash dividend by half. That might sound really bad. It was great big headline in the Wall Street Journal on Wednesday. So I didn't really read the article much. I just asked Rod about it, and he said, yeah, they're spinning off their Warner Media, which is their high cash flow division, and with that, they're going to slash the dividend in half. So it's no big deal, and probably doing the exact thing they should do. But I wanted to make a point of this to say, listen, dividends are not guaranteed. You know, a lot of folks say, I just want to live off my interest in dividends. Well, interest typically has some kind of a fixed component to it, but dividends do not. Every quarter, the board of directors meet and say, okay, we want to, you know, affirm this dividend for the next quarter, and that's all it's good for the next 3 months. So like in this case, you just got halved. Well, I can tell you in the many, many years ago, they used to call the AT&T or Ma Bell the Orphans and Widow Pension Fund, because it was so reliable. In fact, they would raise their dividends every single year. They were prideful of that. Well, when things aren't guaranteed, and AT&T, of course, if you go back and look at history, has slashed its dividend many times since they used to call it the Orphans and Widow Pension, the dividends are not guaranteed. That's why I enjoy talking about things that have more assurances when it comes to income. If you're relying on the dividend for income, it's probably a crapshoot. But if you have a dividend of, let's say, a REIT or of some other corporate structure that doesn't participate in double taxation, let me back you up here. So AT&T makes a buck, they pay tax. They distribute a dividend to you, which is technically like their earnings, then you pay dividends. So that's a double taxation system. But in the real estate investment trust structure, and it doesn't even have to be real estate any longer, but just that structure, corporate structure, they must pass through 90% of the net income to the shareholders, and if they do that, the REIT does not pay tax themselves. So there's a much more stable cash flow. Now, could it change? Sure, because the earnings could change, but 90% of the net income must pass through for them not to pay tax at the corporate level. And there's other vehicles like that as well. Preferreds, as an example. If you have a preferred stock, Yeah, bondholders are first, but preferreds are second, and they typically have a stated dividend that's either perpetual or has some kind of a maturity date. And if they don't pay, if a company wants to stop paying dividends, they can stop paying the common dividend, but they'll still have to pay the preferred. And if they don't pay the preferred, usually they're cumulative, which means, hey, you didn't pay me, so I'm going to accumulate this over in a side account. And when you do resume dividends, you've got to repay all of my money first before you can start paying common again. So I'm just saying that when it comes to relying on dividends for income, it's smart to understand how they can change, why they change, and who can change them. Very important to understand all of that. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about how financial advisors must now start doing something as of February 1st when recommending that you roll your 401k, 401a, 403b, 457 over to an IRA. New rules, new paperwork, new everything. But it is kind of an interesting thing that I thought people should know about. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Rob's teasing me with this tropical paradise music as we sit in a snowstorm on this Thursday, February 3rd, I believe it is, if I'm not incorrect on that. Anyway, it's Thursday, and if you're listening on Saturday morning, it should be sunny, and we're hoping the Hoosiers can pull a great home win off against the Illini at noon. I have friends coming down from Chicago. We're going to have dinner at lovely Malibu on Friday evening, and then we'll go to the game on Saturday and see what happens. What do advisors need to know about giving rollover advice after January 31st of 2022? This has been in the making for quite some time. New rules, new regulations, new standards. Well, there is a new rollover suitability questionnaire that just about every financial institution now has to fill out. And typically, you as a client must sign. Giving them options, understanding why they're in the plan they're in, why they might want to stay in the plan they're in, why they may want to roll to the new plan that they're in, why they may want to take the money out completely, why they may want to move it into an IRA. So they basically have a long questionnaire that we now have to fill out, and then the client has to sign. You know, why are we considering a rollover? Change of employment, retirement, termination of your plan, things like reasons to do a rollover. They don't want to leave the money in the plan. They're dissatisfied with their investment options. They want lifetime income. They want to consolidate. They want professional management or whatever. Those are all things, yes or no. And then you have to say, this is where it gets hard, describe how the retirement investments are currently invested. Well, that's where it gets a little sticky, and every firm is taking a different position. We're an independent firm. We have outside counsel. You know, we're not going to get into the point where you have to go and dig and look at every single fund they're in and what the fees are, and because that's so difficult. Just what are they invested in, right? That's pretty simple. And then we have to now summarize the recommendations, address the services that will be provided. We have to make sure there's reasonable compensation. We want to make sure that that everyone knows the basic conflicts of interest, if there are any. A lot of this has already been in place, but now they're making us document it all. And the only fear that I had when this first was introduced is that will it prevent some people from helping people that don't have a lot of money? Because if there's a ton of liability wrapped up in this to the advisor, to the professional, they may not want to help someone with $25,000. It may not be worth the risk, right? But they are willing to take the risk if they have a bigger client. So they actually watered it down so that they took some of that away, but it's still a best interest standard to say, okay, you know, are we doing this in the best interest of the client? So it's all good and well-intended, but just like everything that's good and well-intended, there's always unintended consequences. So this is all brand spanking new to everyone, although we've seen it coming for quite some time. But I think it's overall a good thing. It makes people at least stop and pause before they make a decision. Most people do roll their money from a 401k to an IRA. I mean, very seldom do they not. And the primary reason is that you can more easily do Roth conversions. You can more easily do qualified charitable distributions. You can't do those in a 401k. Most IRA custodians will allow for more sophisticated beneficiary designations. Most 401ks will not. So there's a lot of reasons beyond the investments that would make it advantageous to move into an IRA. So that's my new thing that we have to follow. Thankfully, I have people in my office that will fill it all out for me, and all I have to do is just glance over it, sign it, have the client look over it, they sign it, stick it in the file, and it's there if regulators show up, which they do, and they will. And thankfully, they haven't been in our office for about 7 years, which means they'll probably be there pretty soon. In our world of SEC registration, they pretty well leave you alone as long as you're doing things correctly and no one's reporting anything suspicious. But they do have an obligation to come visit you every so often, and you're either on a, I think it's a 2-year, 3-year, 5-year, or 7-year cycle. And thankfully, we are on a 7-year cycle, so I'm waiting. I'm sure this year it'll be the year, but just like every other place in government, you know, their people are working from home, and they're, you know, they're shorthanded, and they're out of money, and all that kind of stuff. So that's another reason to say, okay, taxes will be going up because, number one, we have to pay for all these new IRS agents that they want to hire. We need to hire more SEC regulators. So when it comes to regulation oversight, it is expensive, and it usually comes out of your pocket, not theirs. I joked with my brother the other day as we were talking about adding this or doing this, and I said, I don't want to be like the government where we just keep adding and adding and adding. We never take stuff away. So at least as a business owner, you can sit there and say, okay, what are we doing that makes no sense that we're paying for? All right, let's flush that and get rid of it. Now let's add these new things that we think could be productive and beneficial, and that's what we do. But the government never does that. They wait until the last minute to make decisions, and they make rash decisions, and they never take anything away. They just add things, and that's including this new regulatory thing that we have to put up with, which isn't too terrible. All right, we'll take a quick break when we come back. Social Security history lesson. This is going to be fun because I have been talking a lot about this in some of my workshops and things like that about Social Security. Number one, how to maximize it, but then just understanding the history and how things were developed and haven't changed and how long it takes government to do anything about anything at all. I'll have fun with this when we come back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. So I was in a meeting this week with a client, and he is getting ready to start Social Security. He's single, and he says, why in the world do I have to pay tax on the Social Security that I'm receiving when I've been paying Social Security tax all along? Well, it's a great question. Well, the answer is it was never developed to be like a savings plan where you put money in, and then when you retire, you take money out. It's a pay-as-you-go system. So the current workers are paying for the current beneficiaries. That's the way it was set up. So why do you have to pay taxes? Well, let's talk about that. Social Security, of course, is a very important program in this country, no question asked. Majority of people rely on it for at least half of their monthly income, believe that or not. And, of course, the trust fund is on the verge of going bankrupt. You get that on your statement every time. I think it's now 2032. They're saying that the trust fund will be exhausted and only 77 cents of every dollar promised will be paid. Well, we've been here before. Back in 1983, the Reagan administration addressed the annual deficits with the Social Security program by passing this bipartisan piece of legislation, the Social Security Amendments of 1983. So it tackled the program's problems from both sides of the aisle. The amendments of 83 are best known for the creation of the taxation of Social Security benefits, as well as the passing of the gradual increases to full retirement, those delay credits, to try to get people to get to full retirement and then be beyond an incentive. Now, let's talk about why that's the case first. If a person in 1983 was eligible for Social Security and they could take it at 62, even though their full retirement age was 65, would they do it? The answer is, why not? Because interest rates on a 30-year treasury were like 13%. So I could take my money, even though I'm taking less, put it into a 13% treasury bill, and then at 65, I might say, okay, now I'm ready to start spending this money. Well, I start spending my Social Security and this big pile of money that I've saved on the side. So the math made sense that, yes, you should take it early. So they wanted to change that narrative. They said, okay, here's the deal. If you'll wait, we will give you 8% more money each year you wait, and not just to your full retirement age, but all the way to age 70. 8%. What they were trying to combat was the fact that interest rates were 13, and they wanted to give you incentive to wait. So they put that in. Well, what happened? Interest rates continued to fall nearly to zero in the current environment, but the 7-8% delay credit never changed. It's always been there. So it's been the best deal going. Now, in fact, if you look at the math behind that, this is a real simple example, but let's say that you just can't stand it. You're like, I've got to take it at 62. Well, let's talk about that just for a minute. Let's say that you had $1,000 a month Social Security payment, but if you took it at 62, it's 750. So if I took $66,000 and I stuck it over into a almost zero paying investment, I could give myself the money that I would have received if I would have waited to full retirement for those 8 years, going all the way to age 70. Then at age 70, I'm receiving an extra $9,000 a year because I waited and I didn't take it. So basically, it took $66,000 to give me $9,000 a year of extra income for the rest of my life. And, oh, by the way, it's tax efficient and it's inflation adjusted and it's not, you know, and it can be passed to my surviving spouse. So the math behind delay really worked well now, but certainly could be questioned back then. So the taxation of benefits allowed the government to tax up to one half of your individual benefit. If your income surpassed $25,000 as a individual and $32,000 married. Here's the crazy thing. Those thresholds have never changed. They're the exact same as they were in 1983. In 2002, the thresholds are still the same to cause your benefit to be taxable. So just everyone pretty well pays taxes on their Social Security now. Then let's talk about what happened after that. So in 1993, this would have been in the Clinton administration, they went in and amended the 83 law and raised the portion that would be taxed to 85%, but they didn't increase those limits. So now up to 85% of your Social Security is taxed at the federal level, not 50%, not 0%. So that's a way that they could maybe make it 100% and create more revenue to help fix the problem. But here's the funny part. If you go back and look at the discussion that they had back in 83, it's really no different than it is today. Similar to 1983, Democrats are pushing for an increase in tax revenue by lifting or eliminating the maximum taxable earnings cap. So right now we only pay tax Social Security on a certain portion of our income. It's in, you know, it's quite a bit. I mean, it's not like, you know, 50 grand, it's like 100 and I forget what the number is, like 160, 170, $180,000. Then you stop. Well, they want to push that up or eliminate it. While the Republicans continue to angle to raise the full retirement age in order to reduce the program's long-term expenditures. Now, one thing that's interesting is to look at how long it took Congress to finally tackle Social Security issues in 1983. In each year between 1975 and 81, the Social Security Administration experienced a net cash outflow, meaning more benefits were paid out than money coming in, very similar to today. Congress knew for more than a decade prior to implementing the 1983 amendment that Social Security was in deep doo-doo. The declining trust fund obviously cued them into that, and the net negative cash flow beginning in 1975 confirmed it. Yet it took lawmakers essentially waiting to the very last possible moment to fix Social Security in 1983. Like I've always said, nothing happens in Washington until there's a crisis. Had they done nothing, the program would have been they would have needed to reduce benefits, which is the same outlook in today's environment that we are facing in 2032. So what's my point? Well, namely, Congress has a history of sweeping Social Security issues under the rug for fear of upsetting the apple cart and the unpopular solutions that follow. This suggests to me that Congress will struggle to resolve any of these Social Security issues until the last minute. And the longer Congress waits to act, the wider the actuarial deficit grows. Or in plainer English, the longer lawmakers wait to address Social Security, It's plain day, everyday problems. The more painful the fix is going to be on working Americans and retirees once implemented. So that's where we are on Social Security and delay credits, the best deal going still. And the fact that other changes are coming from taxation, increasing ages or whatever. But if you go back and look at 1983, when these changes were made, they said, let's only make this for people that are like born after age or 1960. Well, how old were they? 60? They were like 20, you know, like there were a few 23 years old or younger, right? So they weren't really paying attention to all this. They didn't even, you know, they weren't thinking about any of that. They were just, you know, 1970 flower children at that point. So anyway, that's my story, or 1960, the flower, you know what I'm talking about. I was born in 1970, so I don't really qualify to be anything, I don't think. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's see where we are on time. I think we're doing great on time, actually. So we'll come back. We'll finish up the show. We're running a little bit fast today because I didn't have Rod on to say, hey, Rod, how are you doing? Then sit back and listen for 20 minutes. I actually had to talk myself. All right, we'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. You know, Social Security, it is a kind of a, it's a hard, complicated thing to get your hands around. It seems simple, right? You just wait till you're full retirement age, you take it and you go. But, you know, you have to consider a lot of things. What other assets do I have to help bridge the gap? You know, am I married? Am I single? What's the health situation I find myself in? So there are cases where we suggest people take it at 62, although rare. But even when you say 62, 66, or 70, everyone's all about the break-even ages. So the earliest possible date you can file is 62, right? We know that. So the breakover point is if you wait till 66 versus taking it 62, if you make it past 78, you're better off waiting to 66. If you waited till 70, you have to make it to 82 and a half years old before it was better off taking it at full retirement age, but only 80 years old if you took it at 62 versus 70. So the breakover between 62 and 70 is 80. The breakover between 66 and 70 is 82 and a half years old. So, you know, I never have, like I've said before, jokingly, I've never met anyone who's on their deathbed at 79 or 80 and saying, dadgummit, I wish I would have taken my Social Security at 62. That's the last thing on their mind. But here's the thing. Think about this as joint life expectancy. If you're married, because you're really delaying one benefit typically, and it's the largest benefit. So that becomes the family benefit. So if one of you make it past 82 and a half, you're better off waiting it instead of taking it full retirement age. My bet is most of you listening will have at least one person exceed that. In fact, once you get to age 65, there's a 92% chance that one of you, I'm sorry, there's a 25% chance, if I didn't say that correctly, that one of you will make it to 98. So in all scenarios where we run retirement plans, we don't kick people off at 75. We say, hey, you know, what if you do live to 90 and 96? So that in those cases, it always maps better to take it later. So that's the breakover point. That's what people get all worked up about. And I wanted to just go back over that scenario that I was talking about earlier about how much it costs to kind of save the benefit or to bridge the benefit. And people do get freaked out about, you know, Social Security trusts going broke and there not being enough money. Folks, it will get fixed. I wished it would get fixed sooner than later because, like I said, the longer we wait to fix it, the more painful it will be on everybody. So if we can get our act together and get this thing done, that would be really, really great for me, for as a planner and also someone who's 52 and within, what, 15 years or more, a little more, of taking that Social Security benefit. You know, they could do a lot of things to take it away. I hope they don't. But, you know, you know a lot of people that don't need the Social Security. I have lots of clients that don't need it, but they earned it. They deserve it, right? They talk all the time about Bill Gates having been on Social Security. You know, it's there, and even though it may not be that meaningful for him or some of my clients, and hopefully not myself, it will be there. And then you can do other good things with it. So think about this, again, in real math terms. If I could take $66,000 and put it into an investment and pay and take it out over 8 years, the money that I would be getting from Social Security by delaying, And then at age 70, obviously that goes away, the investments, and my 70 benefit kicks in, and I'm receiving $9,000 more per month by taking it full retirement versus age 62, and it cost me $66,000. That is good math. So I'm always just suggesting, hey, if we have the resources, let's build a little bucket, let's build a little bridge here to get you to that longer and older Social Security age. It's one of the most important planning tools at all. And I always say, I know it's natural for people to want to start their retirement benefits early, but delaying the Social Security could make a huge difference, huge, in your future. So I rhetorically would say, maybe if I could help you retire early and let your Social Security benefits grow with deferral credits of 8% per year, would you be interested? Of course, you're going to say, sure. So then I can show you how to make a strategy to bridge to help fill that income gap between early retirement and maximum security. And then I just sit back and I watch the joy on your face, because that is the most enjoyable part of my job, is solving a problem, seeing it through, and then seeing the joy and happiness on people's faces. All right, I don't know what you're going to do the rest of today, but I'm going to head back. I'm recording early today so I can head back and get some things done. I've lost my passport. Can't find it anywhere. I'm headed to the Bahamas in about 2 weeks for just a short visit. And the person organizing the trip said, hey, send me your passports. Well, heck, I haven't needed my passport for, what, 2 years, 3 years? 3 years. And I asked my wife, hey, is my passport in the drawer where she keeps them? And she said, no. I'm like, oh, yeah, I had it for a while with me. I forget why, and I think it's in the car. Well, now I've been on this wild goose chase pretty well all morning long trying to figure out where in the heck my passport is. So that's what I'll be doing the rest of this afternoon, cleaning up a few things. I will also be working on podcast number 4 and 5, getting that ready to get out to you all on Monday. And feverishly searching for my passport. I'll keep you up to date on that, because it has to come quick, and I don't know how this whole expedite thing works, but I may be online trying to get a copy of it expedited to me. And at this point, you know, I would pay just about anything to have that passport, because I'm really looking forward to the Bahamas after this day that we've been through. Hey, I know I'm a little bit early cutting out on you, but it's a snow day, so I'm going to take it too. Have a great weekend, everyone, and go Hoosiers. Goodbye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.